This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
It also contains two British people talking about sex.
Hey, Chris.
Yes?
Didn't we originally say, like, 17th of January or something like that?
I don't remember that at all. What are you talking about?
I think we're a bit late.
Oh, well, it's the new year. It's good start. Hello.
Hello, and welcome to Teabags and Joysticks, the kinky video game podcast. I am Si.
And I'm Chris.
How are we, Chris?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, even though it's a little bit late to be saying that.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oops. So, our regular listeners will know that, like, we are a little bit later than we planned on being. I'll put my hand up now and go, that was my fault, because life just kind of threw me a couple of curveballs that meant we had to delay recording.
I mean, some of it is good. Good curveball.
Oh, good. Don't get me wrong, good curveballs, like positive stuff, just stuff that I wasn't expecting to crop up and take up my time.
Yeah, life happens.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? But no, we are back. It is a new year. And even though we may be a little bit late, what are we talking about today, Chris?
Oh, we are talking about the kink bucket list and the kink New Year resolutions.
Yes, because new year, new kinks.
I mean, but, I don't. Well, there are still a lot of new kinks that I would try. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
We will come round into that. I mean, it's always weird when someone says to me, hey, what's a kink that you want to try that you haven't yet? And I kind of sit there and I'm like, I'm not sure there's much left. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we shall come round to that soon enough. But we shall start, as we always do, with what's the tea, Chris?
Yeah, the tea this week is I want to talk about The Sims 4.
Okay.
They are finally putting customizable pronouns into The Sims 4.
Wait, I thought they'd done this in a previous version.
Well, they haven't. So, previously on The Sims 4, they tend to basically just not use any pronouns at all for anyone. They tend to substitute them with their names or just don't mention them using a passive voice or something.
Mm-hmm.
They are now putting in customizable pronouns. They have already put in kind of gender neutral clothing. They've got
mm-hmm.
those. But they're now putting in pronouns.
Okay.
That is not only...
I mean, this is positive.
Yeah, it is very positive. It is not only he, him, she, her, and they, them. You can also enter your own pronouns. So if you want to do the Zim thing, you can.
Z's another neo pronoun.
Indeed.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's nice to see some pickup. This is from a publisher that doesn't have the best reputation, shall we say?
Yeah.
So it's nice to see some positivity in that respect, but like, let's also like be aware of the fact of that.
Yeah, saying that The Sims has always been a pretty inclusive franchise. Like same-sex relationship has always been in the game since The Sims 1. Like, they have always had some kind of recognition of like a committed relationship. Like, obviously they first called it a union rather than marriage, but you know, that those were the times when The Sims 1 came out.
No, and it's you're right, and I do remember like when I was a sort of baby queer, sort of making versions of The Sims that included myself with a male partner, and that was always kind of cool.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, I think a lot of people our age probably did something very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. Like, it's nice to see that inclusion. I don't really have much to say beyond that, because it's like I say, it's... I can't divorce The Sims from its publisher. And it's, you know... It's tricky, man, because, like, that's been such a... That, and I think this is one of those things, that, and, like, unfortunately, this is a reality of being anywhere attached to gaming at the moment. Like, there are so many bad actors out there at the moment. Like, even when they do something great, and this is great, don't get me wrong, there is that voice in the back of my head that goes, yeah, okay, but what about the rest of the shit you're doing?
I mean, there's only so much like a developer can do, like a publisher, not with counting, but you know, the developer can only do so much.
No, and this is fair. I mean, it's kind of like I said in our Game of the Year awards. I think to talk about the good they're doing and not acknowledge the problems that they've had is something that I can't in good conscience do.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's a lot of people that work in the industry that do really good work that end up tarnished by association.
Yeah.
And hey, let's realize that. Like, this is a good step. Like, this includes more non-binary and trans people, etc. This is good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know The Sims, the franchise, has recently had some criticism over their lack of representation of ethnic minorities, in that there aren't enough darker skin tones for people to choose from. And they're putting on... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I want to say that they're listening to the feedbacks and they're putting those in. And to be honest, like, skin tones is a relatively easy fix, so there's no reason for them not to do it.
Yeah. It's a tricky one. It's... I think sometimes we can get very caught up in not realizing that things do take time to change, and while it's not right that they were wrong in the first place, like, once they become aware and once there's kickback, it's what do you do about it?
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And this is not me defending any of the poor choices in the first place, because all of this is like, well, you know, should have had more of an eye on this kind of thing, guys, yeah, you know?
But sometimes you don't know. I am going on the tangents here, but, you know, the whole Falcon and the Winter Soldier series, the whole series is about Steve Rogers not realizing what a shield means for Sam Wilson as a black man, and he had no way to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, as someone more privileged, you just don't think of it.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely true. It's like I say, it's what you do once you're aware of it.
Exactly.
And hopefully this is a sign that they're getting more aware of it and getting better with this kind of thing. You know, time will tell, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But either way, like, it's nice to see that they're including, like, trans and non-binary representation as, like, yeah, it's...
Yeah.
It's just, quote-unquote, like, heavily inverted commas pronouns, as it were, but... Hey, like, it's the pronouns are in there, and you can build your own character, etc. Like, you can put yourself in that game.
Indeed,
more fully
indeed,
now,
indeed.
And that's a good thing as a net.
Yeah. So that was my tea. What's on your tea?
I'm going to do something a little unusual, which means that the front end of our show is going to be like a lot more gaming heavy than it usually is, and
wait,
stick
unusual?
With the gaming. Well, so we don't usually have the front end quite so heavy on video games.
True.
But I don't think we can kind of put a show out right now and not talk about the Microsoft acquisition of Activision, which, you know, it's ongoing. It's not finalized yet, and
no,
the I's have got to be dotted and the T's crossed,
crossed, it's probably not going to be finalized till next year. That's what I've heard.
Something like that, and there's probably going to be challenges to it, etc.
I'm not surprised, honestly.
A takeover this size never goes completely straightforward.
Exactly.
It's very interesting to me, though.
Mm.
This is a company that, as in Activision, is deluged in so much hot water right now.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft looked at it and went, yeah, I'll pick that up. Like, that's like...
I mean, in a way, Microsoft are kind of probably picking it up on the cheap. At the same time, they're bringing in a lot of spotlight, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, like, they have. But I'll be honest, like, I look at this acquisition and I'm kind of like, I'm really in two minds.
Yeah, same.
I'm really in two minds about this acquisition because at the same time as I can see the logic of this, which is Microsoft now has access to Call of Duty, Oblivion, I don't know off the top of my head, like Tony Hawk's and all of these franchises that they've just got their hands on.
Hearthstone.
That's a big thing for Microsoft, and that's a thing that's going to make them money hand over fist. Let's not beat around the bush on this. Yeah. And I sit here as a gamer and go, hey, cool, like all this shit's going to come to Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, and I have to tip my hat to Jane Stephanie Sterling on this, because they put a video together on this that I saw just earlier today before we recorded.
Okay.
This is not necessarily a good thing. There's an argument to be made that Microsoft coming in and taking this company over may actually help the employees. Given, you know, a very long and storied history of problems that start all the way up at the top, allegedly, with Bobby Kotick, and carry on all the way down to sort of the very bottom rung of management, allegedly, like, with various problems. Like, I'm not even going to get into all of the problems. I've heard stories of everything from sort of sexism through transphobia through like, corporate bullying, etc. Hopefully this will mean that things improve in that respect. But at the same time, as Stephanie Sterling points out, like, it's not good for competition.
Of course it isn't, yeah. I have not played an Activision Blizzard game for years consciously. Like, I have been looking at their games like, okay, it's Activision Blizzard, I'm not playing it. That has been going on since Modern Warfare 2. So that was a very long time ago.
Yeah. And I know, like, even looking back more recently, there was the entire Blitzchung situation.
Of course.
With Overwatch, etc.
Yeah. No, that was Hearthstone, right?
Yes, Hearthstone, sorry, not Overwatch. But it's... I don't know. On the one hand, there is maybe a little bit of hope that Microsoft will come in here and they kind of kick away some of the dirt, as it were.
Yeah.
With that said, Microsoft are not a clean company either.
Well, of course not.
Microsoft has its own share of like, not just bad press, but bad behaviour in terms of the way it's treated its employees, etc. The way its attitude towards crunch, its attitude towards employee well-being, etc.
Well, yeah. Like, of course, like
there is no innocent party here.
Exactly, there's no one big in the industry that you can say is completely clean. That doesn't exist.
Exactly. So I don't know. Like, I'm in really two minds about it. On the one hand, like, yeah, give me the new Call of Duty or whatever so I don't have to pay for it. Give me the new, I don't know, give me the new Oblivion, etc., not having to pay for it, etc., because it's on Game Pass, but...
Elder Scrolls is not... Elder Scrolls is not Activision.
Elder Scrolls is Bethesda,
yeah. That's not Activision.
Did I say Oblivion?
Yeah, you said it.
I meant Diablo.
You said Oblivion. Yeah.
I meant Diablo. Sorry. I meant Diablo. I do apologize. But still, you know, well, I mean, they've got Bethesda now as well. And this is the other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so you've just bought out Bethesda ZeniMax. Now you're buying out Activision. Like, are we like looking down the barrel of an arms race between Sony and Microsoft right now?
I mean, that's been going on for a while.
It has, but I don't think it's ever been quite this overt.
No, it's not. Yeah, it wasn't the same. No.
I don't know. It's a weird one to me. It really is. It's an interesting time to be a gamer, and it's very weird to see this acquisition going off at the same time as you've got companies like Ubisoft talking about putting NFT in games. You've got, you know,
yeah.
It's a weird landscape in the gaming community right now. And it's almost like Microsoft acquiring Activision is almost the cherry on the top of the cake, you know? I didn't see that one coming from anywhere. And then just literally the week before that, who was it? Someone acquired Zynga Games. Take-Two acquired Zynga Games.
Oh, have they? Yeah. I completely missed that. Okay.
Anyway. I don't know. I just wanted to kind of like have a quick back and forth on that, because it's just like, it's such a weird... Nobody saw it coming.
No.
Because the Take-Two Zynga Games deal happens, and everyone's like, oh, this is one of the biggest takeovers that we've ever seen monetarily. And then Microsoft goes, hold my beer. You know? And it's just like, I'm legitimately, like, my tea is that I don't know how to feel about this, because it's such a weird thing to me. I'm hoping it works out well for us as gamers. I don't know, though. I just hope we don't end up in the situation that you have in Hollywood, etc. It's just like, okay, there's like 3 publishing studios.
Yeah.
I know there's more than that, but like, you basically get in position where it's just like, you're either a Disney film or you're a Warner Media film or whatever. And it's just like, I don't want that to become the thing, you know?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Because for a long time, like, it's admittedly less so now because people have started taking a bit more risk in cinema, etc. But like, it became such a drab affair in the cinema for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really hoping we don't end up with that. But anyway, I've witted on about this far too long. So, since we may have potentially got into the weeds a little bit there and gone a little bit video game heavy, but we are the Kinky Video Game Podcast.
Sure.
Shall we head into the back, Chris?
Yes, let's do that. I mean the tea.
We've just done the tea.
The tea was bit
strong. The tea strong. Was a bit strong.
Bit strong.
So let's take the bag out of the mug.
Yeah.
So what is the bag, Chris?
The bag is our kinky bucket list and New Year resolutions.
Yes. So a while ago we talked about the idea of a kinky bucket list with each other. I thought it might be kind of cool to bring that onto the show.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you do kink for a long time, you can kind of get caught into, or at least I feel, for some people they just like to get to where they are and stay there. But, like, for me, I kind of get into this rut of I'm doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of like to look at kink as a bit of a buffet of... You know, I'll have a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of the other. But like every so often, I find myself on this cycle where I'm eating the same thing every time. Mainly ass.
Okay.
But yeah, like I thought like it might be an idea for us to talk about the things that are on our kink bucket list in terms of like kinks that we haven't tried yet or that we haven't really explored that far.
Okay.
That we would like to maybe get a bit more into.
Okay, are we specifically talking about things that we, like, specific kinks that we haven't done, or are we talking about a particular scene that we haven't...
Honestly, I'm like, I think this works for both, to be honest, so I don't think a need to differentiate between the two.
Yeah, they both fit in the category of bucket list.
Yeah.
I feel like.
And I mean, some things it might be a case of, like, hey, I've done this kink before, but I've never done it this way.
Yeah.
And that can be interesting in itself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, Editing Simon here. So just a quick disclaimer type thing to put in here. I did say this in a little bit just before this, but this is mostly just fantasy talk. There's some things that we discussed that just, they aren't feasible to do in real life, or they're very dangerous to do in real life. Like we talk about some sounding, we talk about breath play, etc. Please do not go out and try these things at home without like really looking into the safety side of things. We do not encourage any of this. It is just purely like, this is stuff that could be hot to do as a bucket list fantasy type thing. I must stress it's fantasy. So, is there anything that you want to throw onto the list first?
I want to, like, because I have still haven't done it properly. I want to do sounding.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you've not really explored it that much, have you? Like, I know we've done a little bit, but no, you haven't really.
Yeah, I kind of figured it. The sound that we use was too thin.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So for listener context, like I bought I think it was Titus brand, I might be wrong about that, but it was marketed as a starter sound basically. And it was a 2 or 3 millimeter sound, and I can see where for some people that would be a good place to start.
Yeah.
For me personally, and I think you had the same response, was it was too thin, and because it was so thin, it almost felt scratchy.
Sharp, yeah. Almost felt sharp.
I actually bought a full sound set after that.
All right.
And found that having a thicker sound worked better for me.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I think that is generally the advice, was to actually start a little bit thicker. Not like thick, but
thicker than you may initially think.
Yeah.
I'd say, like, I'm hoping, like, we may be able to get someone on to the show to talk specifically about sounding that does it more. Because, like, my experience with sounding, even though I have that kit, is still very limited. So I think I'm like you. I think that's something I want to explore more.
Okay.
That might be something I'll try and focus on later this year, I think. Sounding's definitely in there. Although, I will say with sounding, for me, and this is a personal thing, I have tried rubber and I have tried metal. Silicone.
Silicone, yeah.
I don't like silicone sounds.
Fair enough.
Personally, I don't like silicone sounds. They grip too much for what I like.
Fair enough. I don't know, so I can't comment.
That's fair. That's definitely something that's on the list. I would agree with that. I think the first thing I would want to put on the list as well for me is electro.
Okay.
And there's actually room to kind of combine both there. If it's careful, guys. Like, let's be very clear here as we kind of carry on. All the things that we're talking about are things that we haven't got any grounding in, because we've either not done them or not done very much of it. So let's be very clear about this.
Yeah.
But like, for me, electro is one of those that I want to try.
Mm-hmm.
Because so we've tried it once. No, sorry, we've tried it twice.
Yeah.
Once with a little kit thing that you bought that, for me, I didn't like it. Because it was way, way, way too intense for me. Even and there was the no level, ability to adjust it.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a cheap converted kit that isn't really meant for, like, sexy electro, but it's sold like that anyway.
And then the other thing that we've tried is cheap. I remember we were in Bristol and we went into, I want to say it was Prowless. Prowler?
It was Prowless, yeah.
And there was a very nice woman in there who gave us like this really cool demonstration of, I want to say it was an Electrostim kit.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the brand or not, because my memory of that is, this was like 3 years ago.
No, I remember the kit. Yeah.
But I remember, like, her giving us this demonstration and went, hey, like, you hold that and you hold that. Now, like, you two kiss each other.
Mm.
And that was kind of where the spark went off in my brain. I'm like, oh, I want to try that. Like, that could be really interesting with the right setup.
Mm.
That's definitely on my list. Like, that's something I really, really want to explore.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely a lot of people who know quite a lot about electro play.
Mm. And if you're someone that does, like, please do get in touch. Like, partly so that we can ask a few questions, partly so, like, we can maybe get you on the show to talk about it, because, like, this is definitely something that I want to talk about more and explore more. Like, this one's been on my list, like, basically since that first demonstration we had.
Yeah, it's always between, like, slightly out of the price range of, like, just slightly too expensive for us to justify prioritize something else before that, you know.
Like, what else is on your list?
Okay, so bear in mind, this is a bucket list. This is mm-hmm. not something I want to do immediately.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I may never get to do it, but I have seen in porn, like a water tank scene.
A water tank scene?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I follow.
So there were King.com, right, did mm-hmm. a couple of shoots where obviously this is fantasy, it is very dangerous, but yeah, the guy is kind of bound in a water tank, and they get kind of dunked down into the water and brought back up to breathe, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. So this is kind of like a breath play scene with water.
Yeah, sometimes, right. You know, depending on the scene they're shooting, sometimes they've got a breathing tube in their mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, this is, like, let's be clear, this is a bucket list, guys. Like, not all kinks and not all kind of fantasy scenes, except, I mean, I say, guys, like, everyone listening, like, not all kinks, not all fantasy scenes are, one, realistic, and two, safe. Like, please do not do anything that is unsafe. And I'm going to go back in editing and put, like, a trigger warning at the start of this particular one, just to be clear. But, like... Yeah,
bear in mind, porn is fantasy.
I don't know, like, that's... You know what I'm reminded of?
Mm-hmm.
Spacewarp Silver.
Okay.
Because Spacewarp Silver, I can't remember when it was, but like a while ago did these kind of, like, sci-fi. Okay, you know the Star Wars back to tank scene?
Yes, yeah.
Like that kind of thing, but with like a latex goo being like absorbing into them. I used to actually have a print of a Spacewarp Silver that had that kind of scene on.
Okay.
And that's where my mind goes with that. And I'm like, I kind of see it, I kind of don't. Like, it's not my cup of tea, but I'm not going to yuck your yum sort of thing. Like, you know, as a fantasy thing. And maybe there's a whole thing that we could talk to in a future episode about, like, fantasy kink scenarios and fantasy kinks sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I don't know. That's not something I'd... Personally, I don't think that's something I would ever be comfortable with doing with someone, just because the safety side of that just... No. Like, there's too many things in my head that go no.
Yeah. Like, obviously, in a porn shoot, there are a lot of people around to make sure, you know, things are being done safe. There's a whole film crew there besides the people who are actually being shot in the scene. That is,
oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, the scenario is quite different.
Yeah, and that, I think that's the other thing. It's just like, in a commercial scene, you're going to have, you know, two or three people, like, entirely paying attention to the safety side of things. I mean, you don't know what... And this is another thing that I think we ought to talk on a later show, about the difference between pornography and reality.
Absolutely.
But remember, whenever you, like, anyone, not just you, but, like, when anyone, like, our listeners, etc., see a scene like this, like, there's so much going on behind the scenes you're not seeing.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many, like, safety things, etc., happening in the background. And I guess kind of in that... similar sphere, I guess.
Sure.
Like, on my list, like, I have always been fascinated by suspension bondage.
Okay.
Like, the idea of it is really intriguing to me. Okay. But it's not something I've ever looked into yet. Because, again, it's that safety side of my brain that goes, I don't know enough here to make sure that it's safe and not risking, like, any harm.
Okay, fair enough. So this is something that I am actively looking into to set up in the playroom that I'm setting up.
Mm-hmm.
There are specialist equipments that can help with those. If you only use rope, then you definitely need to do what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm coming from. Like, I've again, like you, the kink.com and various other different like outlets, etc. Like the rope scenes where it's just like a scaffold frame and the ropes being used to take the weight, etc. Like,
yeah,
they fascinate me. But I know my level of expertise with rope bondage, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I wouldn't trust my own expertise. Like, tying you up when you're stood up, etc.
Yeah.
And, like, your entire body weight isn't going through different points, etc. Fine. I'm happy with my expertise at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Tying you up knowing that, okay, all your body weight's going to be going through X, Y, Z points and, like, there's risks of slippage and tightening, etc. Like, no, that's I mean, there's those risks when you're stood up, but like the mechanics of someone being self standing, etc., or laid down versus being suspended by your rope work,
yeah,
so wildly different that for me it's very much a bucket list thing of that would be cool to do, like, on both sides of it, but I don't trust my ability.
Yeah, like, don't be offended. Like, I wouldn't trust you to do that to me.
Oh, no, no. And I'm not offended. Like, I am, like, me and you have had a lot.
Whoa.
Excuse me while my equipment just falls apart. He's kind of making my point here. That couldn't have been better timed if I'd tried it. For the listener context, the pop filter on my microphone just fell apart.
I mean, the only thing that would have made it more appropriate is if you had tied your pop filter to your mic with rope.
Anyway.
Do you want to take a break while you reinstall your pop filter?
Yeah, we'll be back after a short commercial break. And we're back.
Okay, good. You were struggling with that.
Oh, the irony of that. But yeah, I was saying the
suspended bondage.
Suspended bondage. Yeah. So it's like me and you have had a lot of conversations about sort of like rope bondage and that kind of thing. And like I've told you before, like I'm still learning. I still don't fully know what I'm doing. Well, yeah, I still don't fully know what I'm doing with it. I don't know.
No, I think that's a good attitude to take. About it. Like, yeah, you're always learning.
Yeah.
Everyone is always learning.
And it's that thing of, like, I don't take any offense to what you said because I know full well my skills are not there.
Hmm.
It's still something I'm trying to develop.
Yeah. Are you talking specifically about rope bondage suspension?
Well, so here's the thing. I like the idea in general.
Okay.
I like the visual of the rope bondage
suspension. It does look, it does look good.
So it's kind of, I guess maybe that's there's two parts to the list in that respect. Like mm-hmm. there's one to do just the general and one to do the rope specific.
Yeah.
And again, this is one that I'm actually like, this is where the kind of like the versatile switch in me comes out and goes like, I'm happy to be on either side in this
thing. Fair enough. Like, speaking of suspension bondage, I have always wanted kind of a scene in the kind of Paris Purge position.
In the Paris what, sorry?
Parrot's Purge.
Parrot's position. Purge, okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain what the Parrot's Purge is for our listeners. And maybe me.
Yeah, so also I've kind of mentioned this before, and I've shown you a picture of the position, which is a kind of you got a kind of metal pole or some mm-hmm. kind of hard pole that your knees are over, but your elbows are under,
mm-hmm.
and that pole get raised up, and by extension, you.
Yeah. So that, like, this means you end up kind of like suspended with your knees over the bar, sort of thing.
Yeah.
This is because I think maybe that's some of where some of my suspension stuff comes from, is right. You telling me about this, because that was one that I hadn't really seen before.
Mm.
And honestly, I hadn't considered. I know how this will sound, because like everyone's who's like a bondage practitioner is going to listen to me and go, how did that not occur to you? But like, that hadn't crossed my mind doing suspension bondage. Like, even though I did rope bondage, you know?
Okay.
So it was just like, I think that's kind of some of where that comes from.
Yeah, fair enough. But it was, that position is not very common, even in pornography, because it's a really difficult position to sustain.
Yeah.
Normally, porn actors would not be able to hold a position long enough for a scene.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about scenes, like, and I'm also kind of looking at the runtime a little, like, because, like, in terms of, like, and I think this is a good thing for anyone to do, like, putting together, like, a kinky bucket list can really be a good idea, just kind of, so that just when you are kind
where
of
you
feeling
can work
that little
towards,
bit of,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's like when you are just feeling that little bit of sort of, not stale, but you want to mix things up a little bit. Like,
yeah.
You can look at it and go, oh, well, you know, maybe I could maybe try and work towards that one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what about scenes? Like, let's talk about a couple of scenes. Because we've talked about a few kinks.
Yeah.
What about scenes? I guess you could say suspension bondage is in itself a scene, but I see it more as a particular... I see that more as one aspect rather than a full scene.
Okay.
I can go first if you want.
Yeah, because I've just mentioned the Paris Perch, which I consider a scene.
Yeah, no, that's fair. See, for me, I'm kind of intrigued by, like, and this is because of a friend of ours, I'm kind of intrigued by, like, a military roleplay type thing.
Okay.
Like... So a friend of ours has a really big thing for militaria and the kind of that whole uniform side of kink.
Yeah.
And there's been conversations between me and them about doing like a sergeant and his drill officer type scenario type thing.
Okay.
And that, like, honestly, yeah, it's kind of intriguing me. Like, I've never been one for uniform. I've never been one to really get into that kind of gear, like my rubber and my leather, sure, but never really got into uniform.
I have.
I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued about
that.
It.
I have walked into my local fetish club dressed in full camo before.
Cool. I mean, I think I've seen your camo shorts, was it? Or was it trousers?
They were trousers.
Was it trousers? Yeah. I think I've seen your camo trousers. I don't think I've ever actually seen you in full get-up.
Yeah, so I've got trousers, I've got a shirt, I've got a vest on top of the shirt.
I don't know. Like, I never really got into the military thing, but like, it's one of those things. Like, the seed's kind of there, and it's one I want to go further with.
Okay. Okay. A fantasy scene of me, you know this because I have also spoken to you about this, was a sleep sack and piss recycling scene.
Ah, yeah, combining water sports and bondage.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like, please be careful with these things because we are purely talking fantasy right now. We aren't talking, like, practicalities, etc. But like, I see why you're interested in that, kind of bringing together two big kinks into a scenario.
Hmm.
That's definitely something
just,
that...
Just for listeners, like, back then when I first had that idea, I wasn't that big into water sports.
Mm.
And, yeah, all the water sports that we have been doing in the last couple of years probably kind of stem from this.
Mm-hmm. All those water sports like wakeboarding and jet skis.
Yes.
All the fun things that we tried in lockdown.
Yeah. Yeah. Who doesn't do water sports?
No. In seriousness, like, so yeah. This is actually kind of an interesting point because when we met, I seem to recall water sports was something that was on your bucket list. And now it's actually something that we've explored together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this kind of brings me back around to what I said before about like having sitting down and putting together your like kinky bucket list, as it were, mm-hmm. can be actually a really useful exercise in terms of kind of working out where you want to kind of let your kink go next.
Yeah.
If you want to explore more.
There's also nothing wrong with just staying what you're comfortable with.
Oh, absolutely.
Doing.
Some people know exactly what they want and they want to stay there. I fully respect that. And honestly, for the longest time, that's what I was like.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I'm a lot more kind of, oh, let's go out there and try everything. And this is also interesting to me that when we talk about this as well, because someone asked me the other day, oh, what are you into? Age-old question here. Every hour, oh, what are you into?
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know how to answer them. Because I kind of sat there and I'm like, the problem with that question is, there's not much left that I've not tried. And that's how I was thinking about it.
You say that, yeah.
And, well, this was going to be my exact point. Like, having sat down, like, over the last, like, half an hour that we've been talking about this, like, we've come up with a few things that we've either only barely scratched the surface of, or we've not even tried at all. Yeah. And if you actually sit down, you go, okay, well, what's on my bucket list? What stuff that I want to do more of, or I want to explore for the first time, or whatever? You'll find that there's more there than you think there is.
Oh, yeah, the list of kinks are limitless.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's the wonderful thing about kink. Yeah. And I'm sure there's many kinksters that can relate to this. Like, when you're talking to someone who isn't a kinkster, and they go, oh, so what does kink mean for you then? Like, because, you know, maybe I'm curious about one or two things. And you're like, oh, well, you know, this. And they go, huh?
Yeah, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, honestly, the hanky code is not long enough.
No, it's not.
There aren't enough colours.
Yep. And it's just like, kink is a buffet. I always refer to it. It's just like, whenever someone's like, ask me what I'm into, I always send like a list and go, this is not everything. This is just kind of my main things. And it's not a requirements list. Think of it more like an old-fashioned pick and mix.
Yeah.
So, given that we've thrown a few things on the bucket list, as it were.
Sure.
Now, you don't necessarily have to take it from the bucket list that we've mentioned. You might have something else in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your new, he says in quotes, because we're like a month into it near enough, year resolution, as it were? What's something that you want to kind of make sure you explore this year?
Events.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Do you want to expand on this at all?
I mean, go to them, meet some new people from different places. Like, yeah, meet some other kinksters that, yeah.
And we have plans to try and do some.
Oh yeah,
like we've talked about like Manchester Rubber Weekend. We've even talked about some of the ones abroad. We'll not say where because we don't know if it's going to happen yet. Like if we do them, don't worry. Like we will be talking about experiences on the show, etc. But like, there's plans to try and do it. Mm-hmm. COVID and life depending.
Yeah. The thing is, I do want to meet more Kingsters. Like, mm-hmm. even in my own city.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many of them there that's I haven't spoken to. I've only just seen mm-hmm. from other people's pictures that I know, you know, that kind of thing. I want to know you. Yeah.
Not in a creepy way, just
well, no. But...
just like, hey, it'd be cool to like talk to you at an event or something because I've seen you around, not had a chance yet.
Exactly.
Okay. So events is kind of top of your list for your resolutions type of thing. You want to make sure you hit more kink events this year.
Yeah, at least a couple.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, do your resolution for you?
For me. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I want... Because I was going to say events. Because, like, you've done events before. You've been to a couple of events abroad. You've done a couple of weekends, etc. I haven't. Mm. But given that you've said events, I feel, like, bad kind of putting that as my resolution thing. Because I feel like it's a bit too similar.
No, we can... So, well, okay, you can say events, but we can have more than one resolution.
So I think for me it's going to be... I don't know. I think Electro is possibly what I want to try in this year.
Okay.
Electro is probably one of the ones that I want to try and get into this year. Because I think this year it might be feasible to.
Mm.
Whereas in previous years, for various reasons, it hasn't. So, yeah, I think that's maybe where I want to kind of explore a bit more this year.
Okay. So, for me... The other thing that I would like to do this year, with your permission, is basically an overnight scene.
Okay.
Because we always have kink when we stay together. Like, mm-hmm. We always have kink in bed, like just before we sleep.
And in then, bed, hey, out of bed, in the living room.
Yeah, but then when we sleep, that control kind of goes away.
Mm.
So yeah, I like something overnight that would remind me that, you know, you are still, I don't want to use the word in control, but in control.
I don't want to use the word, but I'll use the word.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely something that I'm open to talking about. Like, I'm going to say to you, like, we're not going to have that conversation on air because, like, there's a lot of safety stuff and a lot of like, course, yeah, other stuff that we're going to have to go into around that. But, yeah, like, that's definitely something that I'm open to doing.
Yeah, that's why I said, you know, we need to talk with your permission.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not against that. I think like if I'm going to put a second one on the list is that I think I maybe want to try a little bit more submission this year.
Okay.
Which is kind of a strange thing for me because like, so our listeners will know, like I do switch, but they may not necessarily know how infrequently that is.
Mm.
And I think it's something that I maybe want to try a little bit more.
Okay.
But it's going to be a case of kind of seeing what situations present themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Go a little bit deeper kind of thing, you mean?
Yeah. So, okay. So, like, we've got kind of our two kinky resolutions. Like, I'd be really curious to see what our listeners come up with.
Yeah, indeed. Also, a third one. Just very quickly, I want more people to use my playroom. I want more guys in there. Because I spend the time to build it, and I'm sure you'll be used.
Applications on a postcard.
Yeah.
But with that, like, let us know what your kinky resolutions are. Let us know what's on your kink bucket list as well. I'm really curious to see what's on people's bucket lists. That's always an interesting conversation to me when I first, like, get talking with people. It's just like, what's, like, you know when you're getting to know a kinkster for the first time?
Mm.
It's like, what's something you've not tried yet that you're into?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The first thing is, like, what have you done? And the second question is, what have you not done but you want to?
You see, I sometimes do that the other way around.
Yeah?
Yeah, particularly when I'm talking with a sub, it's always interesting to me to hear what they've not done that they want to explore, because that can kind of give me a bit of a framework to try and start working with.
Okay. Fair enough.
But anyway. But with that said, shall we move into the joysticks?
Okay. Yeah, let's do
What's been on your joysticks this week, Chris?
What's been on my joystick?
Well, this week, this month, maybe, I guess. Since we last talked.
I've only got one game I want to talk about.
Oh?
And that is Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Ooh, okay.
Mm.
So, I'm intrigued now, because the last Marvel outing in video games didn't go well, and it was by the same company.
It was by the same publisher.
Okay, now that's a fair distinction, it was by the same publisher.
Yeah, exactly. They were developed by a completely different team in Montreal, and it turns out to be the complete polar opposite of Avengers.
Okay.
Yeah, it is actually a really good game.
Is it? Okay, so when I saw the trailer for that game,
mm-hmm.
I looked at the gameplay and dismissed it. Not because it was too closely associated with the Avengers game, believe it or not, but because it struck me that just about everything I was seeing implied two things. A significant amount of control of the character wasn't necessarily in your hands, because it seemed very much you hit a button and an action occurs and you just have to wait for the action and then move, kind of like the old style RPG stuff. And that a lot of the enemies seemed like bullet sponges. How true would you say they are? Because it might be from my perspective that the advertising didn't do it a fair shout.
I don't agree with the first thing you said. Or just,
okay.
Yeah, you can definitely order your teammates to do things, because you're only really in control of Star-Lord.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of if you are in the puzzle solving stage rather than a combat
mm-hmm.
kind of style of parts of the gameplay, then yeah, okay, you direct your teammate to do a particular thing. That it kind of is how it works. Or it's the difference of doing it yourself, or you kind of get Rocket to do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that as a problem. In terms of combat, no, that's just not true.
No, okay. It's just the way it read to me in the advertising.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let me ask you this as well. What's the microtransactions like?
Non-existent.
Oh, okay.
There is no microtransactions.
Interesting.
I looked at it and I thought, oh, there are about 12 different costumes for each character. That's going to be microtransactions. Mm. It isn't. They're all, you can find them all in the game.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, final question for you then. Do they suffer from the other problem that the other Avengers game had of they look like the dollar store cosplays? Since you mentioned costumes.
So it isn't too bad. It isn't too bad. Rocket looks like Rocket. I mean, I guess because
surprise, the CG character looks like CG.
Exactly. Like Rocket hasn't really got a problem, because you know he's not trying to look like some other actor.
Mm-hmm.
Star-Lord looks completely different, so he does not look anywhere near Chris Pratt, or it wasn't an imitation of Chris Pratt.
Okay.
Yeah, the characters actually all look different. They have a skin each, that kind of dresses them up as the movie equivalent.
Okay.
But the default costume is not the same.
Yeah, I don't mind so much if it's an optional thing. It was just like, the Avengers one just struck me as they were just trying too hard.
Yeah.
they were trying too hard to be that while not be that. And I would like...
Exactly. They want to be... The Avengers wanted to be the same, but they couldn't, so they made a really, really close approximation. But,
Tell you what the Avengers felt like. The Avengers felt like it was going to be a close tie-in, and then somebody around, like, the MCU, whether it was a Kevin Feige or whoever, put a kibosh on that at the last minute, and they went, okay, we need to kind of pull that back a little.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it doesn't do that with the Guardians. I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy is probably one of the ones that lends itself slightly more to video games.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
probably.
I was very apprehensive. It's that once bitten, twice shy thing. Like, I was very apprehensive after the last outing.
No, and I get that. But, yeah, honestly... is a really good game. They suffer from none of the problems that I found with Avengers, which was a ridiculously slow pace to start off with, plus the other things that I have already talked about. But, you know, Guardians, they went straight in, and everything was relevant. The story itself is quite good.
Okay.
I haven't finished it yet, but so far, you know, it feels like the Guardians of the Galaxy.
And that's a big thing. Because that's always the problem with any kind of franchise tie-in. It's just like, does it feel like it's this particular set of characters?
Yeah. It feels like this is what the Guardians would do.
Right, okay. I might have to give that a look.
Mm-hmm.
You may have convinced me to give that a second chance.
Okay, so that is my joysticks. What's on yours?
So on mine, and I will do what I have done whenever we have mentioned this company on the show so far, it is a Activision Blizzard title. I do not condone any of the bullshit that has been going on with Activision Blizzard that we mentioned at the top of the show. However, okay. I have been playing Diablo 2. No, sorry, not Diablo 2, Diablo 3.
Diablo 3.
Now, let me be clear. This was purchased on my account long, long before any of the stuff had come out into the mainstream media, etc., that we now know. Like, I am not about to, like, throw money at them. This was, like, I have had this in my account since before the entire Blitzchung incident, etc., where I swore never to give them a penny again.
Yeah.
So, you know, let me just be clear about that. This is a game that sat languishing in my account for a long time because I didn't feel right playing it, quite honestly. A couple of friends of mine recently kind of got me into it. Mm-hmm. And I've had a good time with it. I see why people like it.
I mean, I guess I can as well.
I will say, however, it is incredibly player hostile. Incredibly player hostile.
Interesting. Okay. Honestly, I don't know that much about Diablo, the franchise.
So, the reason I didn't get into it heavily the first time was because I found a lot in there just completely perplexing.
Fair enough.
The reason I managed to get into it this time is because I basically had a friend chaperoning me through the first few missions and explaining how different systems work.
Mm.
The game does not... You know how I said before that Minecraft doesn't do a good job of explaining things to new players?
Yeah.
Diablo is that on steroids. Diablo doesn't explain anything. It assumes that you have the knowledge from playing previous titles of that genre or of that series.
Ah, okay, I see.
Which I'm no stranger necessarily to a dungeon crawler. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I cut my teeth on dungeon crawlers, like, back as a teenager sort of thing. Like, I still have very fond memories of playing through things like the Lord of the Rings games. If anyone remembers the dungeon crawlers they did for those back on the Game Boys. Yeah. Or, like, all that kind of thing. That, like, the Game Boy was had a really good set of dungeon crawlers when you looked into them. But, like, I'm no stranger to them necessarily, but I found it damn near impenetrable. And even now, there's some things I'm struggling to wrap my head around. It doesn't explain anywhere near enough. Once you have got past that...
Okay.
And, again, I had to have someone who's into it chaperone me through it. But once you have got past that, it's quite enjoyable. And there's an interesting story being told there. One problem I have with it, however, is in multiplayer... It's very, very easy. In fact, it's way too easy for anyone who joins your multiplayer session to advance your game and you miss sections. So, for example, at one point, Mr. Ian jumped into my game. Mr. Ian, who guested on the Game of the Rear Awards, and accidentally advanced some of the dialogue of my story while I was in a completely different area, so I haven't had that bit of story. Now, thankfully, it was a relatively insignificant piece, and he was able to tell me what got said.
Okay.
But that doesn't alter the fact that this is something that shouldn't happen. If someone's jumping into a person's world, story progression should depend on that person.
I mean, this should really depend on the person who's furthest behind.
No, I think it should depend on the host.
I mean, yeah.
If you're dependent on the person that's furthest behind, then you can have a situation where you jump
way back to the beginning of the game. But yeah,
if it depends on the host, the person who's furthest behind should, in theory, know what they're jumping into in terms of, okay, well, this person's way ahead of you, you're going to get spoilers.
Yeah, true.
You know? So, I don't know. Like, it's been interesting. I've only played one class so far. I get the impression I'm coming close towards the end of the first act, because it's split into three acts.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's been enjoyable. It's definitely got me in a position that if they announced Diablo 4, I would have to look long and hard about picking it up. With that said, under the caveats that I mentioned before about, like, you know, not wanting to support that kind of behavior, etc. But
yeah,
you know, if Diablo 4 came to Game Pass, for example, I'd maybe pick that up.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see. I mean, it's definitely a popular franchise, and there are a lot of fans of that franchise, so I can imagine it being quite enjoyable. Because otherwise. I mean, it is definitely to a lot of people's tastes. So, it's not something I would look into doing right now. But yeah,
for me, it's scratching an itch that I've had for a while, because I wanted to find a dungeon crawler I can kind of get into that's got that progression. Because while I enjoy, like, Hades, etc., like, I wanted something with a little bit more development, I guess, in terms of, like, building out your loadout, etc. I don't know. It's scratching that itch for me at the moment.
Okay.
But yeah, that's all I've really got to say on it at the moment, because I'm not. It's one of those things, like, I'm a little bit into it, but I'm not far enough into it to give a full feel on the story beyond what I have, etc.
Yeah.
So.
This is a game that I have dismissed for quite a long time because this is Activision Blizzard.
Yeah. And like I say, had I not purchased it long before any of this came out, it wouldn't be something that I was picking up either. It's just purely it's been sat in my library for that long that, well, they're not getting any money off me at this point, so. If anything, it's me costing them money to keep the servers up to allow me to play it, so, you know?
That's one way of looking at it. I mean, it's not the way I would look at it, but no.
But yeah, I mean, I will also say I'm pretty sure I picked it up on a very cheap sale as well, so. But anyway, that has been My Joysticks.
Okay.
But I think that's our show this week, Chris, because I don't think we've... Okay. Okay, 5-minute Marvel stuff, I think we'll leave for this week. Like, there's not been that much news. There's been one trailer that, honestly, I haven't had a chance to properly watch yet, so I want to have a chance to do that before we talk about it.
I mean, we also never talked about the Doctor Strange trailer, but then...
No, so let's do 5-minute Marvel next episode. This has kind of just been kind of, hey, we're back.
Indeed.
But if people do want to find us elsewhere, Chris, where can they find us?
You can find us on social medias at TBNJ Podcasts.
That's right.
You can also leave us a voice message, anchor.fm/TBNJ Podcast.
That's right. But for now, I have been Si.
And I've been Chris.
Welcome back, but also goodbye, I guess, because this is the end of the show.
Yay!
It should be an interesting year ahead, and we shall see you soon. Bye! Bye. This episode of the Teabags and Joysticks podcast was edited by TB&J Sign, overseen by TB&J Chris. The intro and outro music is Quarter Conundrum by DOAK, and the soundboard consists of royalty-free audio. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.